Translation: the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by expanding His own energy, keeps this cosmic manifestation visible, and again sometimes renders it invisible. He is both the supreme cause and the supreme result, the observer and the witness in all circumstances. Thus He is transcendental to everything. May that Supreme Personality of Godhead give me protection. Purport: the Supreme Personality of Godhead is multipotencies, parashya shaktir vividhaya shuyate. Therefore, as soon as He likes, He uses one of His potencies, and by that expansion He creates this cosmic manifestation. Again, when the cosmic manifestation is annihilated, it rests in Him. Nonetheless, He is infallibly the Supreme Observer. Under any circumstances, the Supreme Lord is changeless. He is simply a witness and is aloof from all creation and annihilation. So I'm going to read two more verses and purports, because these are short purports. Kalena panchavatam iteshu krishnasho lokeshu palishu sacharavahetushu tomas tadasit gohanam gabhiram yastasya pari bijvarajade vibhu. In due course of time, when all the causative and effective manifestations of the universe, including the planets and their directors and maintainers, are annihilated, there is a situation of dense darkness. Above this darkness, however, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I take shelter of His lotus feet. Purport: from the Vedic mantras, we understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is above everything. He is supreme above all the demigods, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. He is the supreme controller. When everything disappears by the influence of His energy, the cosmic situation is one of dense darkness. The Supreme Lord, however, is the sunshine, as confirmed in the Vedic mantras, Aditya Varanam Tamasa Parishtat. In our daily experience, when we on earth are in the darkness of night, the sun is always luminous somewhere in the sky. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Sun, always remains luminous, even when the entire cosmic manifestation is annihilated in due course of time. No yasya deva rishaya padam vidur jantu punakko rhti gantum iritam yata natasya kritibir vicheshtato durat yayanu kromanaha sa mavatu. Translation: an artist on stage, being covered by attractive dresses and dancing with different movements, is not understood by his audience. Similarly, the activities and features of the supreme artist cannot be understood even by the demigods or great sages, and certainly not by those who are unintelligent, like animals. Neither the demigods and sages nor the unintelligent can understand the features of the Lord, nor can they express in words His actual position. May that Supreme Personality of Godhead give me protection. Purport: a similar understanding was expressed by Kunti Dev. The Supreme Lord exists everywhere, within and without. He even exists within the heart. Savasya chaham hridi sannivishto ishvara sarva bhutanam hridesh arjuna tishtati. Thus it is indicated that one can find the Supreme Lord within one's heart. There are many, many yogis trying to find Him. Dhyana vashita tad gatena manasa pashanti yam yogina. Nonetheless, even great yogis, demigods, saints and artists, saints and sages have been unable to understand the bodily features of that great artist, nor could they understand the meaning of His movements. What then is to be said of ordinary speculators like the so-called philosophers of this material world? For them He is impossible to understand. Therefore, we must accept the statements given by the Supreme when He kindly incarnates to instruct us. We must simply accept the word of Lord Ramchandra, Lord Krishna, and Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and follow in their footsteps. Then it may be possible for us to know the purpose of their incarnations. Janma karma chame divyam evam yoviti tatvata tukva deham punar janma naiti mamiti sorjuna. Bhagavad Gita 4:9. If by the Lord's grace one can understand Him, one will immediately be delivered, even within this material body. The material body will no longer have any function, and whatever activities take place within the body will be activities of Krishna consciousness. In this way, one may give up his body and return home back to Godhead. So these three prayers, and of course all the other prayers that are in this chapter and the other chapters of this section, are coming from Gajendra the elephant, who has been grabbed on the foot by a dangerous crocodile, and he's in very great pain, and he is fearing for his life. So in that very great distressed condition, he is surrendering to Krishna. These three verses we've read today are nice prayers which are philosophically explaining the position of Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vishnu means all-pervading. That is the meaning of the name Vishnu. He is all-pervading. So these verses are expressing that idea, how Lord Vishnu is all-pervading throughout his manifestation. Here, the verse which is on the board states, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by expanding his own energy, keeps this cosmic manifestation visible, and again sometimes renders it invisible. He is both the supreme cause and the supreme result, the observer and the witness in all circumstances. Thus he is transcendental to everything. So Gajendra is realizing the transcendental supremacy of Lord Vishnu. Now he is praying at the end of these prayers. Here we find, may that Supreme Personality of Godhead give me protection. This is his mood. He's recognizing the position of the Lord, but he has one demand. Please save me. So therefore, in chapter 3 of Nectar of Devotion, it is explained there that actually Gajendra, he's classified as a neophyte devotee. In Bhagavad Gita, 7th chapter, Krishna explains, there are four kinds of neophytes who approach him. And of the four kinds, Gajendra is an example of the first, Arta, which means he is in distress. Out of great distress, he's approaching Lord Krishna, begging the Lord, give me shelter, give me protection. Please relieve, please lift the cause of this great distress from me. So, this is neophyte position. He's approaching Lord Vishnu. He's recognizing the supremacy of the Lord. But his interest is, please save me from my distress. Now, if we compare Gajendra to Vasudev, now you will see in Vasudev, Lord Krishna's father, an example of an advanced devotee, not a neophyte. Because these prayers that we're reading, they're very similar to prayers offered to the Lord by Vasudev. When, you know, when Krishna first appeared in the prison house before Vasudeva and Devaki, he showed the form of four-armed Vishnu. In this way, it was very, very clear. Here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is residing within the heart of all souls in this world, including sleeping souls like Bhakti Mihi. Also Krishna is there in his heart. So Vasudev was recognizing Lord Vishnu's position, just like these prayers are also explaining the transcendental position of the Lord. But the conclusion was quite different. Vasudeva was also in a distressed condition, distressed like anything. He had been staying in a jail cell for years. And his beautiful wife, Mother Devaki, she was giving birth to sons in these years. And the evil demon Kamsa would come and kill each one of these children as soon as they were born. So, such a distressful condition. Now, Lord Vishnu, the omnipotent, omniscient, supreme personality, appeared in that jail cell. So what did Vasudev do? What did he do? Did he ask for anything? Did he ask, "My dear Lord, here we are, I and my wife rotting in this jail cell. Please release us. Please protect us from Kamsa. Please bring back our dead sons." No, there's no such prayer. Instead, Vasudev, his concern was for Lord Krishna. Although the Lord was standing there as Vishnu, the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead, then he reverted to, he changed to the form, little blue baby Krishna. But there was no doubt this little baby is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Vasudeva became very anxious. Oh, Kamsa will come and he will try to kill Lord Krishna. So out of this anxiety, Lord Krishna reciprocated. You know the story, the guards fell asleep, the door to the jail cell opened, the chains that were binding Vasudev dropped off. He was free. But free for what? So that him and Devaki could run off into the night and get on Pan Am and fly away somewhere? No. Devaki, she waited patiently in the jail cell. While Vasudev, he picked up baby Krishna and he took the Lord over to Gokul to place him safely in the bed of Yashoda. And in fact, when he was crossing the Ganga, the waves swept baby Krishna away from his grasp and he became like a madman trying to find Krishna in the waters. This was his complete anxiety. I must save the Lord. I must give the Lord shelter. This was his mood. I must give the Lord shelter. Although his position was full of all kinds of distresses, he never once was praying to Krishna, "Please save me." He was trying to save Krishna, like a madman in the middle of the Ganga, looking, and then Krishna again was there. He could take him in his arms and bring him to the other side of the Ganga, take him to Gokul, lay him safely in the bed of Yashoda, and of course then he took the girl baby who Yashoda had given birth to, and the story goes on. But the point is that Vasudev was concerned only with Lord Krishna. So that is a difference between an advanced devotee and a neophyte devotee. If we look at it another way, Vasudev, he was concerned with the mission of the Lord. Krishna appeared with a mission, and Vasudev was very, very anxious to take part in that mission. He was playing his role perfectly in that mission. He was not concerned with himself. He had all selfish concerns he had thrown to the side long ago. He was only wanted to play his part in the Leela of the Lord. Whereas Gajendra, the elephant, on the other side, we can see, although he is also Krishna conscious to a certain extent, the conclusion of his Krishna consciousness is, "Please save me." So therefore, Gajendra is classified as neophyte. Of course, because Gajendra the elephant surrendered to Krishna, this is the point of neophyte, when he surrenders to Krishna and becomes purified, then he's no longer a neophyte. Another example of that is Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj also started out as neophyte. He was worshipping the Lord also out of the distress of anger. He had been insulted. 5-year-old prince, Kshatriya. So he could not bear insult. Been insulted by his mother, stepmother, or his wife. His father had 2 queens. So his own bodily mother was not the favorite. The other queen was the favorite. So she had insulted him by reminding him of that. You are not the son of the favorite queen, so you cannot sit on your father's lap like my son. So he became so insulted. And having this Kshatriya spirit, he had to do something. So he went out into the forest and stood on one leg. And in this way, for a long, long time, performing austerities, he became very, very powerful. And the power, the mystic power that he developed was disturbing the whole universe. There was flames of tejas. Tejas means spiritual power, or mystic power. So the tejas emanating from his body was disturbing the movement of the planets. And thus the demigods, they prayed to Lord Vishnu, "You must do something. He is causing a great disturbance to the whole cosmic order." So Lord Vishnu appeared. And being purified from having the darshan of Lord Vishnu, then Dhruva Maharaj, he gave up at that point all of his selfish desires. So similarly, we shall see at the end how Gajendra will become released also from his selfish desires. So therefore, there's of course nothing wrong in starting off as a neophyte with selfish desires and praying to the Lord for protection. Or as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, they want relief from distress, or second kind of neophyte wants money. Third kind of neophyte is curious. Fourth kind of neophyte is desirous of transcendental knowledge. So they may be approaching the Lord for these things, but if they attain the shelter of the Lord and become purified, then they become advanced devotees after giving up the selfish desires. So this is very interesting philosophical point to understand the cause of distress. It is selfishness. So you see, approaching the Lord for selfish desires, it is a little bit foolish, because the fact that you have selfish desires, that is the cause of the distress. So one only becomes relieved from this distress when one becomes purified through devotional service and gives up the selfish desires. Then you can understand what is liberation. Then one can become actually transcendentally satisfied. But because we are so much attached to our own enjoyment, therefore that is very difficult to understand without purification. But the fact is that the distress is caused in the beginning. The distress of this material existence is caused in the beginning by selfish desires for enjoyment. There is this, and thus, because we have these selfish desires, this is the next point, we fall into bad association. Bad association means you associate with Maya, for instance. Come into the clutches of Maya. It's also explained in Bhagavad Gita, 2nd chapter. Jeto vishaya pungsang sangas teshu bijayate, sangat sanjayate kama, kama krodha bijayate. So first of all, there is this contemplation. Jeto vishaya pungsang. I want to enjoy. Then sangas sanjayate kama, kama krodha vijayate. Then we, by this contemplation, we start to associate with the senses and their sense objects. Huh? And by this association, we become lusty. And then the lust becomes anger. And then it goes on. The anger leads us downward, downward, downward to bewilderment, to illusion, forgetfulness. Buddhi nasat vinashyati. We lose our intelligence and then we're finished, falling down into hell. So one stage after the other, we enter more and more deeply distressful conditions. It's all beginning with senseful, selfish, sensual desire, which brings us into bad association. And this selfishness, because we're so befooled, we're such fools, hanging on to our little tiny selfish desires, we go to hell. We go to hell, hanging on to these desires. We're dragged into the most abominable situations. But this is the rascaldom of the conditioned soul. He won't let go of his foolish, tiny, private desires. There's a story from Panchatantra, which very nicely illustrates all this. The story of the camel, who was on a caravan. There were many camels. And this was a young camel. So, you know, when you're young, you get a big head, you think you know everything. And you don't want to listen to the others, especially the older persons, or if you're a camel, the older camels, mother and father camels. So, they were on the caravan through the desert, and of course, when going through the desert, there's not much to eat or drink, so the tendency is to get hungry. Camels, of course, they have that very nice hump on the back, so they can go for a long distance without having to eat or drink. But this young camel, because he was very sensually inclined, and when you're young, you're very sensual automatically. So he, as they were going through the desert, he saw some plants, with some berries, and he thought, something to eat. So mother camel said, no, no, don't eat that. It's not good for you. But little camel thought, oh, what do you know? I'm hungry. So then the little camel ate up all the berries and the plants and everything. And then they continued on. But actually, these berries were poisonous. So the little camel got sick. And he got very weak. And he fell behind. And the other camels were saying, come on, come on. No, I can't go. And finally, the camel herder, the man in charge of this train of camels, because he didn't want to get lost in the desert for one young, foolish camel, he drove the camel, other camels ahead and left this one behind. So then this foolish camel was alone in the desert, didn't know where to go. So he was just wandering, wandering, wandering. And finally he came to one valley. And by this time, he was not only sick, but he was very hungry, very tired, very thirsty. His hump was almost on layer, you know, just like in the car, you know, you can drive it and then it goes down to layer and the little yellow light comes on. So his yellow light was on. And so he didn't know what to do. Then he met some other animals. Actually, this valley it was inhabited. The king of the valley was one lion. And the lion had ministers, his special court. There was a leopard, there was a fox, and there was a crow. These were the lion's special ministers. So, the camel came into the valley, and the king and his court were coming along inspecting their kingdom. And the camel, he bowed down before the king lion and said, "Oh, my dear lion." Of course, he was very afraid because he knew these are all meat-eating animals, and I'm a vegetarian. And meat-eating animals like to eat the vegetarian animals. But he was totally helpless, so he just bowed down and said, "My dear king of the beasts, lion, here I am, a poor lost young camel. I have no home. I'm very weak and tired and thirsty and hungry. And I have no choice now but to surrender to your mercy. You are a very noble beast. Please give me protection." So this lion, he actually was noble and compassionate. So when he saw the camel bowing down with his long neck and head on the ground, then he said, "All right, yes, I will give you protection. You may live in my valley peacefully. And although we are meat eaters, we will not bother you. This is my word as the king of beasts. So you may stay in this valley and enjoy the grasses and the cool streams flowing down from the mountains and be happy." So the camel was very pleased. But of course, the situation was that here he was, camel, the natural food for the meat-eating beasts, and he was accepting them as his association. So that's bad association. So what happened was, is that sometime later there was a famine in this valley. Somehow the sun got very hot, and also the animals, the meat-eating creatures would eat, they were dying or fleeing away. And so the king and his court became very skinny and hungry. So the lion got so hungry he was just sitting in his cave. And he was telling his ministers, "You must get something for us to eat." "Oh, yes." So the other three ministers were saying, "Yes, yes, we are trying, we are trying. You know the old leopard here? Sometimes he's catching one hen and bringing it here. But there are four of us. And when we, of course, you take the king's share. And then that leaves just a few feathers for us. And then we are getting weaker and weaker. So what can we do? The old leopard, now he has no strength to go out and hunt anymore. Oh, it's very terrible." And so then the three ministers, they decided to have a meeting together to figure out what to do. So the fox, the leopard, and the crow, they went off and had a little council. And the crow is very intelligent. And the crow, he ruffled up his feathers and he was walking around, thinking. And then he said, "I have an idea. There is this camel. He has received special protection of the king. But actually, he would make a good meal for all of us. He's a big animal. And if we eat him, we'll get strength." And then the fox said, "But my dear crow, the king has protected this camel. He will never allow us to kill him and that we eat him." The crow said, "Yes, I know, I know, I know. But I see a way around this. Come here." And then they all put their heads together and there was... So... So then the camel was eating some thorns, and as camels always do. And then he saw the leopard, the fox, and the crow. They were walking by in a line, and they were looking very sad. And then the camel said, "Why are you looking so unhappy? Where are you going?" And then the animals, the ministers, they said, "Oh, as you know, there is a great famine for us meat-eating creatures, and especially the lion, our king. He is suffering so much. He is just in his cave. He cannot come out. He is so weak. And we are his surrendered ministers, so we have just had a council, and we have decided that we're going to go to him and offer him our own bodies for his meal, so that at least he will get strength." And then the camel, he was very impressed. "Oh, you are such loyal servants. Yes, what can we do? We are the servants of the king. He is our Lord. For us, the king is God. Through him, we can please God. So in this way, by giving our bodies to him..." Oh, and the camel was going, "Hmm." And then, "So we are going now." And then the crow looked at the camel and said, "Actually, you know, you are very dear to the king. He has given you special protection. You should come along with us and just stay with the king, because we're going to give up our lives now. And the king, after we're gone, he'll need some friendship. And you will be such a good friend to him. He's very fond of you. So you come with us." And the camel said, "Okay." So they all went up. And then the camel stood there and watched as one by one, first the crow came up to the king. "My dear King Lion, you are so hungry. You have nothing to eat. So I am offering you now my body. Eat me." And then he fell down right in front of the lion. And then the king looked at him and said, "This is ridiculous. We've been friends for so many years. And anyway, who ever heard of a crow being food for a lion? Just a miserable black bird. Lions don't eat crows." So then the fox, he came up. "Yes, all right, crow is no good for lion, but I am a fox. I have much more meat on my body than any crow." So then he fell down in front of the lion. "So eat me." And then the lion again said, "No, no, no, no. We have been friends for so many years. You are my faithful minister. And besides, you are a fox. I don't eat fox meat." Then the leopard came and did the same thing. "Then eat me. I'm even bigger than the fox. Much more meat." And the lion again said, "Oh, don't be foolish. You're my brother cat. Cats don't eat cats." Then, of course, you see, all the while the camel was watching. Nope. One after the other. So then the camel, he said, after the leopard, then he said, "Oh, gee, King." Then he fell down at the feet of the lion and said, "I'm very good. I'm a camel. You know, lions, they always eat camels anyway." And then the other three ministers, the crow, the fox, and the leopard, they suddenly looked at the king and said, "Yeah, this is a great idea." And then they jumped on the camel and killed him right in front of the lion. So before the lion could do anything, the camel was already dead. And then so they all had a feast. So this is an example of bad association. And in this story, it all started with selfish desire. He was foolish. Foolishly, he would not listen to his mama, and he was eating the poison berries, and in this way he got separated from the camel herd and came into this valley of bad association. And in the beginning, it looked okay, Just like in the beginning, when you come to this material world, everything looks all right. But you take shelter of bad association, and sooner or later, nature asserts itself. Just like if a vegetarian animal, camel, takes shelter of meat eaters, there may be all kinds of promises. Yes, don't worry, but nature will sooner or later assert itself. There was famine, the meat eaters got very hungry, and the camel became their feast. So, this is the exact situation in the material world. Because of our selfish desires, we end up in distressful condition through bad association. So the way to end this distress is obviously to get good association. That means association with devotees. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said, the whole process of devotional service, and Rupa Goswami has confirmed, the whole process of devotional service begins with satsanga, association with advanced souls. Satsanga Krishna Seva Bhagavata Nam Brajavasi A Pancha Saran Pradhan. There are five important aspects of Krishna consciousness, which Lord Chaitanya has mentioned. And the first one he has mentioned is satsanga, association with devotees. If you associate with devotees, then Krishna Seva, then you can serve Krishna. And in that association, Bhagavat, you hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Nam, you chant Hare Krishna. Brajabasi, you live in holy places like Vrindavan. So these are five important aspects of Krishna consciousness which everyone should follow. And satsanga is the first. It all begins also with with satsanga. And also, Rupa Goswami, adau shraddha tata sadasanga. Adau shraddha, first you must have some faith. Anyone who wants to become a devotee first has to have faith in Krishna, faith in God. You have to have some faith in something higher. Then, but that's not enough. Shraddha is not enough. Then, tata sadasanga. Then you must come into the association of devotees. Then, atta bhajana kriya. Then you can engage in devotional service. And so on, you make advancement up to the point of love of God. But again, it all begins with devotion, with the association of devotees. Good association. Good association. In this association, you get strength. Get strength, spiritual strength. Also, even in material world, if persons become strong friends, then there's much strength there. They can work together to get out of danger, get out of distress. And to illustrate that, we have another story. This is the story of the rat, the deer, the crow, and the turtle. So, the... Turtle. No, shield crow. Yeah. So, at one lake, these four animals were living together. They were very, very good friends. The rat, the crow, the deer, and the turtle. So, they were very, very good friends, loved each other very much. So, and they were always cooperating together. So one day the deer, beautiful young deer, she was out eating grass, and she got caught in the trap of a hunter. The hunter had tied one rope to a tree, you know, this kind of trap where you step in it, and then ding, and then the rope is catching onto the foot, and the deer could not get away. So, but the crow was nearby, so the crow could see, oh, our sister deer is caught. So then the crow flew, and the rat and the tortoise, turtle were together at the lake. So then the crow flew to the rat. My dear rat, you must come quickly, because the deer is caught in a hunter's trap. So we need your strong teeth to bite through the rope, so she will be free. So then the rat was saying, oh yes, immediately. Then he was running through the grass to the deer. And then he was chewing. And in this way, the rope was cut through. And they were just preparing to leave that place, because of course the hunter could come at any moment. And then they saw the old turtle. He was just coming. You know, turtles are very slow. So for some reason or other, he could not even bear a few moments away from his three friends. So he just had come out of the water and was just coming, galumping along. And then the other three animals, they said, oh, turtle, why did you come? Now the deer is free, we're ready to go back. And now the hunter may come in. And then they heard the hunter coming through the brush. So the three animals, of course, they left, but the turtle was there. The hunter first went to his trap. He saw it had been chewed through, so he had lost the deer, but then he saw the big turtle. Ah, turtle soup. So then he grabbed the turtle and tied the turtle up to a tree. And then he was making his plan, right? Make a nice big fire and cook up this turtle. So then meanwhile, the other three animals, they had a meeting. Oh no, now our turtle friend is in trouble. What shall we do? So then the deer, she went nearby to where the hunter was gathering the wood for making the fire, and she laid it as if dead. And then the crow sat on the deer as if picking the flesh of the deer, as to really show that the deer is dead. So, meanwhile, the rat was coming through the grass, getting near the turtle. So in this way, then the hunter, he saw, oh, the deer is dead. Oh, this deer had previously escaped from my trap, but now it is dead, so that's very nice. I can cook up this deer also and get this skin. So this is very nice, because now I have not only a turtle, but also the deer. My hunting day has been very successful. So he came to collect the deer, and suddenly the crow attacked the hunter. Suddenly flew up and started to peck at the hunter's eyes and scratch his head, and he was running around. Aah! And of course, then the deer got up and ran away, and meanwhile the rat was chewing, and chewed the rope through, so the turtle could galump away through the grass. And in this way, the crow gave trouble to the hunter until all the other animals were safely back to the pond. And then the crow flew away. And the hunter, being so much frightened by all this, he ran back to the village, and he told that this pond must be inhabited by evil spirits, because the animals are acting very strangely. So in this way, then, no human being would ever come to that pond again. And the four animals lived peacefully and happily ever after. So this story illustrates how, by good association, cooperating together, one can overcome distresses. Now this is, of course, a material example. But it is a fact that when devotees are working together very nicely, performing devotional service in great harmony and cooperation, then in that association they become very strong in Krishna consciousness. And although Maya comes to attack and give trouble, the devotees, having that strength of grace of Krishna. So that's why devotees should fix themselves on the mission of the Lord, this Sankirtan mission, and give up all selfish desires and simply work together to perform this great mission, Harinam, Sankirtan, book distribution, preaching, saving the conditioned souls, bringing them to Krishna, engaging everything, anything and everything in Krishna's service, like that, this mission of Krishna consciousness. But to work together, it requires that we must conquer over our private anarthas. Again, we come back to this point of the private material desires. These must be conquered over. Otherwise, these anarthas, these unwanted things in the heart, they will make trouble for us even in the association of devotees. Just like this tongue. This tongue is called asati. It is unchaste. It is an organ which is very unchaste. The tongue always wants to yak, nonsense talk. So in this way, there's a very strong tendency to gossip, to criticize, to find fault, blah, 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 prajalpa, talk nonsense. This is a very, very principal way in which the good association that is possible among devotees is ruined, is spoiled, simply because someone cannot control their tongue. Therefore, they have to talk nonsense, and the others hear nonsense, and everything becomes disturbed. Then there is politics, then there is misunderstanding. And again, the distressful conditions, they come. Again, there's distress. And again, we're falling out of the mood of the mission, selfless mission, and we're only concerned with ourselves again. How to solve this distressful situation. And then no one can preach. Everyone just worried about themselves. So, I'll tell one story to illustrate that too, huh? Yes. Mihi likes these stories. He asked me before the class, he said, I am very sleepy, but if you tell stories, I will be awake. So I will tell stories to keep everyone awake. So this is a story of, this is again, a very nice illustrating this principle, because it's a story of three friends, two swans and one turtle. And they were also very good friends, working together very cooperatively in their pond. But then the pond was drying up. So because the pond was drying up and all the living entities were leaving, the fish were dying. So there's nothing to eat. The swans and... not the swan, there was actually storks. What do you call them? Cranes. These tall birds that eat fish. Yes, cranes. So the cranes and the turtle, they have the same food. Fish. So the two cranes, they decided, well, this pond is no longer suitable for us to live. So we know of another pond, very nice one. We're going to fly there. So let us say goodbye to our good friend, the turtle. So they came to the turtle and said, Turtle, as you very well can see, the old pond is drying up. There's not much to eat here anymore, so we're going to leave. We know a nice place. We're going to go there. So we just wanted to say goodbye. And the turtle said, Oh, okay, what for you is simply a matter of a little flying to a new home is for me... impossible. It means my death. When this pond dries up, I'm finished. Oh, woe is me. Oh, no. So he was lamenting like anything. So then the two cranes, they were very compassionate. And so they said, all right, we're going to help you. But you have to control your tongue. Because this turtle, he was very talkative. He was always talking, blah, 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 loved to talk. So the two cranes, they said, look, we're going to take a stick, we'll each hold it in our two beaks, and you have to grab the middle part of the stick with your mouth, and then we will fly to the pond, and you just hang on with your mouth. But you can't talk! And he said, all right, yes, it means my life. How could I be so foolish to talk? So they came with a stick, he grabbed on, and they started to fly. And of course it was a very heavy load, so the cranes could not fly so high. So they were flying over one village. And then the people came out, and they were saying, "What's that?" And they were pointing, "Look at this! This is crazy, a flying, was that a flying turtle or what?" And they were all talking and making rude remarks and laughing. "Oh, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen." And then the turtle, he became very angry. "Oh, they're laughing at me." And they kept it up. And then finally the turtle said, "Shut up, you crazy fools! You are..." And he was finished. So because he could not control his tongue, he fell down. So similarly, the same thing happens in Krishna consciousness. Because sometimes devotees cannot control their tongues, they also fall down. So therefore, again, we come to this point of mission. Accepting the mission of the spiritual master, mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If we can accept that mission and control our senses for the purpose of executing the mission, then there's no problem on that platform. There's no problem. We don't have to worry anymore about these distressful conditions. They don't mean anything to us anymore. Actually, the mission is to see that Krishna is enjoying. That's the mission of Krishna consciousness. Our enjoyment, this Srila Jiva Goswami has given this in one purport in his Srimad Bhagavatam commentary. What is that? Parama Purusham, Bhajaniya Parama Purusham, Sukham, Mata Sukadvam, or something like that. So that just means that for a devotee has only one pleasure. Devotee's pleasure should only be one thing, to see that the Lord is enjoying. In other words, devotee's pleasure is the pleasure of the Lord. He has no other source of pleasure. So, if we accept that principle as our life and soul, then there's no more problem. If we simply surrender completely to the mission of pleasing Krishna, and we know, of course, how Krishna, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, our spiritual master, also, we know how they are most pleased by this Sankirtan Yajna, the sacrifice of Sankirtan, of preaching Krishna consciousness, distributing Srila Prabhupada's books everywhere, more and more and more. Sometimes we become distressed doing this. Sometimes we feel, "Oh, I'm not enjoying." But that is Maya. Actually, we should be thinking how our spiritual master is enjoying this service. How Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how Lord Krishna are enjoying that these books are going out. This should be our mood. If we can absorb ourselves in that pleasure, in other words, the pleasure of Guru and Gauranga, then we shall always be blissful. Because that is the superior pleasure. That pleasure is infallible. It is above the material nature. Krishna, it is His nature, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. He is always enjoying. Eternally. He doesn't need this material nature to feel satisfied. We are sometimes foolishly thinking, "Oh, I must enjoy these material senses." Sense gratification doesn't make us happy. It simply causes suffering. But Krishna, it is His nature. He's always enjoying. So therefore, we have to absorb ourselves in His enjoyment. We have to connect with His enjoyment. So, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa, Matayama Naksu Yak Praninam Pratipalam Smaramatam Upetya Lilayatena Bhuvanani Jayat Tadushram Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. This very nice verse is explaining. For those who are Manasu, who have a very nice, very pure mind, they are able to meditate upon the transcendental enjoyment of Krishna. Ananda Chinmaya Mataya Manaksu. If you have a Manaksu, very nice mind, Yat Praninam Pratipalam Smaramatam Upetya, then you can remember always how Krishna is enjoying. You can remember always Krishna is enjoying. Then, Lilayatena Bhuvanani Jayatajasham. This remembrance, this absorption in Krishna's lila, his pastimes of enjoyment, Bhuvanan Jayatajasham, this conquers over this material world. For a devotee who can do that, he is transported out of this material nature. No more contact with his material nature, even in this body. So, this is the art of attaining success in Krishna consciousness. Learning to concentrate only on the pleasure of Krishna and the pleasure of our spiritual master, who is of course representing Krishna in this world for us. So therefore, this time of year, Christmas marathon time of year, this is the golden opportunity to absorb ourselves in pleasing Krishna and spiritual master. One has such a nice opportunity to give up all other concerns. Give up concerns for our own eating, sleeping, mating and defending, all of these kinds of things. And simply submitting ourselves, surrendering ourselves to the book distribution. In this time of year, all around the world, the devotees are, of course, staying up late at night, 10, 11, 12 at night, going to these, any corner of the city where there are people, and giving them books, making a great effort to distribute just a few more books every day than the day before, if nothing else. So that at the end of the year we can present a very nice quantity of books distributed for the pleasure of the spiritual master and Krishna. And actually everybody knows who has done Christmas marathon. One may be in Maya through the whole year, thinking again of one's private desires, eating those poisonous berries of sense gratification. But if at that time, that month of December, if somehow or other we're able to just shake loose of this nonsense and just absorb ourselves in this book distribution, then when you think back over the whole year, you have to admit, yes, that was the best time when I was out there distributing those books and thinking of nothing else. Then I was really happy. It's a fact. That is the real enjoyment. And if we can surrender ourselves to that, then we shall very easily cross over the distresses of this material world. One does not have to be concerned with these distresses. That's the advanced platform. Not concerned with these distresses. Because where these distresses come from? Simply because we're harboring our own private little desires of sense gratification. We keep them in the heart very carefully. Thus we're in distress. But to accept the mission of Krishna means you give that up. If you accept the mission of Krishna, then there's no more time. There's no more room for the private desires. Therefore, there's no question of distress. No, one is absorbed. This is samadhi, absorbed in samadhi. In the samadhi of serving Krishna selflessly. And thus, for such a devotee, although he may be in situations which would cause others so much great distress, because they're concentrating only on their private sense gratification. His consciousness is far, far above that. So he's moving through this world, through so-called distressful situations, but he's not, he's simply not conscious of it. Srila Prabhupada says, it is like a drunken man. Sometimes also in Christmas marathon, we see how the devotees become so much intoxicated. They become as if drunken with transcendental bliss. So it's like that. When one is absorbed selflessly in this mood of devotional service, one becomes as if drunken. The drunken, you know, if you've seen them, they come out of the knipes. They're drunk, they don't know where they're walking, they fall on their head, they don't feel it. They don't know what's going on, they don't care what's going on. So similarly, devotees who are absorbed in this mode of selfless service, they also become in that way transcendentally drunk. They're going through life, going through the world, simply doing their service for Krishna. And so many situations in which others are complaining, others are lamenting, the devotee, he just takes no part in. He's not even aware of it. Because his consciousness is fixed on the pleasure of Krishna. And he's sharing in that pleasure as Krishna's servant. So, this is the time of the year. If one has gone through the whole past 11 months and has been just eating these poisonous berries of sense gratification like the foolish camel and getting sick and getting weak, now, before the year's up, you have the chance to taste what Krishna consciousness is really all about. So, therefore, Christmas Marathon, Ki Jai! Are there any questions? No? Okay. So, there's going to be a meeting? Book distributors? After prasadam? What time? As I like. Well, last time it was at 11, huh? Okay. Alright, so we'll have a marathon book distribution meeting at 11 o'clock in my room. Alright, Jai, Haribo.